You are listening to Redistricting Texas, a short series featuring Brandon Waltons and Jeremy Kenshin.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of our Redistricting podcast. I'm Brandon Waltons, joined with Jeremy Kenshin, of course, to talk about some changes that were made as the legislature has now finally passed its maps for redistricting. Today's episode, we're going to go through the Texas Senate maps, which interestingly were the very first ones, Jeremy, that we got to look at, those drafts.
That's right. This took the form of Senate Bill 4, obviously originally filed in the Senate. It was the one that kind of moved quickly along with one other redistricting map for the State Board of Education, but it moved quickly through the process. There were, I'm not going to say nominal changes, but certainly less controversy over the number of districts and how those districts were put together when compared to, let's say, the House redistricting map or anything like that. So.
If you didn't check out the first episode of this podcast, you should probably pause it right now and go listen to your conversation, Jeremy, with Trey Trainer, who talks about a lot of the mechanics, a lot of the specifics about redistricting. But 30,000 foot view, this is the process that lawmakers go through every 10 years where they draw their maps for the Texas House, the Texas Senate, State Board of Education, and congressional districts. We're talking about the Senate districts right now. Right now in the Senate, the current partisan makeup, okay, it's controlled by Republicans. There's 18 Republicans and 13 Democrats. These new maps, if electoral trends hold, would give Republicans one more seat in there, changing that to 19 Republicans and 12 Democrats.
That's right. It looks like this sets it up very obviously, right, to increase the number of Republican state senators in Dan Patrick's Senate, which, I assume would only kind of solidify his hold on the Senate and enable, you know, some more kind of Republican-favored legislation passing through the chamber.
All right, let's take a look at some of these specific changes that were made. We'll start in Northeast Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, where probably the most attention, the most opposition that we saw from Democrats on the floor as they debated against these redistricting maps were changes made to Senate District 10. Now, this is a district that currently takes the form of a fraction of Tarrant County. It's a seat that has been held by a Republican. It has also been held by a Democrat, notably Wendy Davis. It was held by a Republican again in State Senator Connie Burton before that seat flipped and went to State Senator Beverly Powell in 2018. Now it looks like this seat probably going to a Republican just because of the way that it was changed. I mean, it does not even look like the same district.
Sure. To Senator Powell's point multiple times when she brought it up as this is being debated, it is probably the most blatant example of kind of the district being drawn in such a way to favor a Republican, heavily favor a Republican, as it expands beyond that of just Tarrant County and into some of the kind of more rural counties that surround the DFW area, mm-hmm. bringing in primarily Republican voters. Yeah,
Parker County, Johnson County, and beyond even goes a little further west, bringing in some of those Republican voters. I mean, this is the seat that they made so that they could get to that 19 Republican number from 18. I mean, this seat is the pickup.
That's right. It's also notable too, right? This was also the district that was the result of litigation from last cycle's decennial redistricting process as well, which Senator Powell brought up multiple times as this was being debated and frankly ran through the Senate.
So moving to a different part of the Metroplex before we look at a little bit of the rest of this map, I want to mention what they've done in Senate District 8. This is the district that's currently it's Collin County with some of Dallas County as well. It's represented by State Senator Angela Paxton, who's held that seat now for a few years. Currently stretches from Richardson to Plano to McKinney, kind of through those cities up there. And because of changing demographics, changing electoral trends in Collin County specifically, they have redrawn this to bring in some more, kind of expand the district increase the size and bring in ultimately some more Republican voters to that district and shore it up a little bit.
That's right. It absolutely shores up kind of Republican support in the district. You may recall that Senator Paxton, in her general election last go around, was challenged by Democrat Mark Ferris, and she only won, and these are narrow elections for senators, right? Only won by a little bit more than 7,000 votes. And so this is certainly an attempt to kind of shore up that support. And in order to do so, they had to bring it out of Dallas County and expand beyond that of just Collin County into like Hunt and Raines counties.
Moving down to Central Texas, you've got one Senate district there that's actually being shored up for a Democrat as part of some trade-offs made to bolster some of the districts around it, that being Senate District 14. Now, this is a seat currently represented by State Senator Sarah Eckhart, a Democrat from Austin. She's one of the most liberal senators in the Texas Senate. Currently, her district stretches from Travis into Bastrop. Now it's going to be, I believe, wholly located within Travis County, which actually opens up some interesting opportunities for some of the districts around it as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you see, I think the most blatant example of that is you see Senate District 5 kind of be shored up for Senator Charles Schwertner. He's a Republican there from Georgetown. He gets some added counties under the kind of the proposed boundaries. And then I think most notably, I'm sure we'll pivot into the Senate District 24, which currently, right, stretches all the way from like Abilene down south towards like west side of Austin Lakeway area. And you kind of see that whole district shift south, if you will.
Yes, shift south. This is a district that is currently represented by State Senator Don Buckingham, a Republican who announced that she is not running for re-election because she is seeking election as land commissioner statewide. And so that opened up this seat, but it also opened up some opportunities for them to shift some of the counties around. They shifted them, to your point, south largely. And when they did so, they picked up part of Atascosa County. A lot of people saw that at first and said, well, that's kind of interesting. Atascosa County is a county just south of San Antonio. Why would they do that? And then it seemed pretty soon a little obvious why they may have done that.
Sure. That's right. So former State Senator Pete Flores, who represented State Senate District 19, he was, of course, there for only one legislative session. He lost to now State Senator Roland Gutierrez, who was a former House representative. It was the first time, I think, since Reconstruction, right, that Republicans had won that seat in a special election. They weren't able to hold on to it. So what they did is seemingly write Pete Flores into this kind of shifted south Senate District 24, picked him up, specifically. And then shortly thereafter, after these proposed maps came out, he announced a bunch of notable endorsements as well. It looked like the fix was in.
Yeah, absolutely. And so looks like a lot of support sort of lining up there for that Senate District 24. Looking over to West Texas, I want to mention this. You've got Senate District 31. It's currently represented by State Senator Kel Seliger, who, incidentally, is one of the most liberal Republicans. I think probably the most liberal Republican in the Texas Senate right now. Somebody who has been a thorn in Dan Patrick's side, somebody who has thwarted conservative priorities. And it looks like his district is being redrawn in a way. He's from Amarillo. This is a district that stretches up from the Panhandle in Amarillo down even through to Midland, Odessa, that area. His new district is going to get a lot more of that Midland area being in a lot less of that Amarillo area that sort of bolstered him before. And that really changes the dynamics of what that election could look like. He's already got some challengers that have announced in a Republican primary.
That's right. To my knowledge, he already has two challengers announced. And notably, you have former President Donald Trump announcing his endorsement for one of Kel Seliger's challengers in Kevin Sparks. The district is certainly written in such a way that it kind of takes power away from maybe what would be Amarillo dictating what happens to that district and opens it up for kind of the area that surrounds the oil and gas area that surrounds Midland, Odessa to potentially have a chance in getting their nominee in that seat as well. And so that's a yet to be seen. But State Senator Kel Seliger did, as soon as these proposed districts came out, I mean, he was very critical of them as they went through the process.
Yes. And so as we look at some of the other parts of the state real quick, I just want to touch on when you look at the Houston area, for example, you actually don't see – and you look at East Texas, you look at even South Texas, not a lot of big changes there substantively. It looks like a lot of the changes were made in Dallas-Fort Worth and in Central Texas.
I would definitely agree with that. I mean there's changes, but they're more nuanced. They kind of just shore up a little bit some of the seats that are there. No real changes as far as what the political disposition will be from those delegations at all.
So talking about the impact of what this map means, as we said at the start, this map, again, if current electoral trends hold, would mean that Republicans would have 19 of the chamber's 31 seats. What does that mean for Republican legislation going forward? It's not necessarily as if a lot of the conservative priorities have had issues coming out of the Senate, although there have been some examples sure. where they've needed every vote.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, you absolutely enjoy the potential luxury, right, of not having to ensure that every Republican is lined up behind whatever priority or whatever legislation you bring that you deem as a priority to the Senate floor. Having that kind of buffer of maybe one or two falling off of that is probably helpful as well for that agenda. And I think if you're a Republican state senator, current Republican state senator, there's a little bit of pressure alleviated on you as well, right? Where you might not necessarily have to toe the partisan line on every single vote that's taken, because as you and I know, that pressure is pretty intense, at least from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Where as we look back on the most recent legislative session, almost every vote that was taken mm-hmm. seemed to be a partisan split between lawmakers there in the Senate.
Last thing I want to touch on is the courts. Okay, so this is for all of the maps. There's the question about what kind of litigation. We've already seen litigation begin to be filed. What does that mean as far as the timeline for approving these maps? Again, these maps have been approved. They've gone to the governor. The legislature has essentially done what it's going to do on them. But now the way the process is, right, is, Democrats sue and we're going to see what happens in the courts.
Sure. I think everyone knows this was – they knew going into this process, lawmakers did, right, that this would inevitably end up in the courts. That's why you have lawyers, right, or attorneys aid in kind of drawing and making sure they abide by how they interpret the rules that guide the process. I think the other consideration that goes into this, right, is that this is as we talked about in the previous podcast episode with Trey Traynor, this is the first cycle in which Texas is not under additional federal scrutiny under a process mm-hmm. called preclearance, which is important. Which means that, at least according to Trey Traynor, he expects most litigation will take place at the state court level as opposed to potentially getting kicked up to the federal level.
Right.
And I think I'm not going to say it's baked in; anything can happen. But I think going into this process, you saw lawmakers try to kind of tiptoe around some of these things, knowing that they had spoken to attorneys to try to avoid any mishaps that throw this off course.
And we'll see exactly what happens. We'll be following it at texasscorecard.com, where you can see all of our coverage of the redistricting fight up there, as well as, as this progresses through the courts. We'll be following that as well. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Check us out next week as we talk about the other side of the Capitol, which is the Texas House, 150 districts. We'll talk about the changes that lawmakers made there. Thanks for joining.
Redistricting Texas is a production of Texas Scorecard. You can find more stories and journalism at texasscorecard.com. If you like today's show, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcast platform you listen on.